Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Outside the Box, Paranormal Paragons Radio, with your host, Christine McKee. Light over dark. Truth over lies, love over fear. Open your mind and free your soul. Visit us online at ParanormalParagons.com for more information and previous shows.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us on the show tonight. What we are talking about today is basically we're going to be talking about the choices that people make in their lives and how to go on from those choices. Now, some people, with regards to estrangement, some people choose to cut off a family member not because of abuse, but because of religious beliefs or conflicts or betrayal. Addictions is another one. Mental illnesses, criminal or unhealthy behaviors. And although some of the reasons can seem quite trivial, everybody has their own reasons. So joining me tonight on the radio show is Ed Granger. Good evening, Ed. Are you with us?
Yes, hello.
Hello, Ed. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Now, our subject is a very touchy one for you because it's something that you yourself have been, I don't know whether victim is a good word for it, but you've been burdened by estrangement. Can you define exactly what estrangement is for those that don't understand completely?
Well, it is a difficult thing for people to understand who haven't really been through it, but it's being cut off from friends or family or both, when you don't necessarily want that to be the case. Sometimes it's mutual. In my case, it isn't. It's a lonely place to be.
Now, if you have questions for myself or just things that you want to get off your chest or ask our guest tonight, the guest phone number to call in is 929-477-3760, and we'll take your calls. And I want you to tell for me or tell the listeners what experiences you've had with the estrangement that you're familiar with.
Right. Mine was connected to my religion. I grew up one of Jehovah's Witnesses. My parents were both Jehovah's Witnesses, and they believe in a strict policy of a shunning, similar to what the Amish do, for those that leave the religion at some point in their life. They believe that the best course of action is to shun or to ignore them or estrange them, in the hopes that they will shame, guilt, or it's essentially emotional blackmail. Blackmailing that person to come back into.
Now, I have to add to the listeners that if you do talk to a Jehovah's Witness, a practicing Jehovah's Witness, they will flat out deny that this is one of their practices, but it is one that is encouraged by the, what do you call your minister type of leader?
The governing body, the elders. Yeah, the governing body.
Right. Yes, they will flat out deny that this practice is being made, but yet they will highly encourage that this be one of the first means of attack or practice when someone leaves the Jehovah's Witness. So continue.
Correct. No, you're absolutely right. And this is common for cult-like organizations or cults in general. To do this, and it serves two purposes. One, of course, to make the members that have not left, keep them in a state of fear so that they stay within the organization, and also to avoid in avoiding the one that left, it avoids any possibility that there will be a, quote, contamination of their mindset with views that come from outside the organization, because cults in general have very strict control on what you can think or feel or consume, as mentally speaking, or read.
This is so true. I mean, not to get off topic, but if the governing body were a country, we'd be at war with them nonstop for the way that they treat their people. Would we not?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like Wild Jehovah's Witnesses, like some cults, like the Branch Davidians, and the ones that Jim Jones. There was a suicide in Guyana many years ago. Some of them physically separate themselves, or like some of the hardcore Amish do, they physically separate. There is this idea of separation, whether it's physical or not, from the rest of society. It's very black and white, us versus them thinking.
Well, this is how you proceed in brainwashing people, is just separate them from family or friends that could have a different opinion.
Yes, yeah, protects the rest of the group from being liberated in a sense.
But anyways, we are getting off topic. So when someone has an estranged relationship with their family members, much like you do, the question is often whether the distance they place between themselves and the family member is due to unhealthy boundaries or healthy boundaries, or that the relationship is just toxic, or that it's one that's better served to the end, like to each person? Or is it instead due to unprocessed emotional detachment? I guess what I'm trying to say is, how do you live with it? Like, what do you tell yourself every single day to kind of get through it all?
It's a lot like the death process, grieving process. It's almost as if, like, this happened about, just over 6 years ago. It's like my family died in a sudden car crash, and there doesn't really feel like there's any hope for closure, because there is no communication. There's zero. There's no phone calls. There's no letters, not even at holidays or birthdays or anything like that. It's like being separated by a 100-foot wall. There's no way to communicate. Even though the door is open on my end, there's no willingness for them to communicate. And I realize where that comes from. In my case, there was no dysfunction per se in the family. It simply came from the religion imposing its viewpoints on that family, and now they are in fear of contacting me for fear that they will also be punished and potentially thrown out of the organization. And for them, it's life and death. This isn't true of every estrangement, but in this case, it's I understand where they're coming from. So that helps me a lot. Of course, mm-hmm. having support of my friends, or what few friends I have, and family outside of that, my immediate family, is good too. But it's a very lonely experience. And it's one that, on occasion you're out and you hear others, or they'll ask you, hey, how's your family doing? Or they'll talk about their family. Oh, I just saw my mom on the weekend and, we had a good time, and I can't relate to that anymore. So
right.
On one hand, I feel sad and jealous, actually, of that person, because they do have this.
So you feel like you're robbed of those experiences.
Yes. And on the other hand, I realized that, and then there's guilt, right? When I did have that relationship, could I have done more? Should I have spent more time with them? Maybe there's something I could have done to avoid it. So you go through the grieving process, the denial first off, and then the anger mm-hmm. towards them and everyone else. You go through the bargaining phase where you're like, well, maybe would have, should have, could have. And then there's depression, and then there's finally acceptance. So I'm to that point now where I'm at the acceptance phase, and I'm fortunate that way. But I've had to go through a lot of therapy and different things to get there.
Now, when the family member that you're estranged from, and this might be for even the listeners out there, if it is emotionally or physically or financially abusive, that's something that causes suffering to the victim. It's
right.
Important that they not have that they not tolerate any acceptable behavior just because someone is related to them. And it's more important to stay safe than to be in contact with that family member. Now, for yourself, because it is a religious view that is putting up that barrier, do you find that it's important to stay safe and stay away from them for not just your safety, but for their safety as well? Or do you say, to hell with it, I'm going to have contact with them? Or do you get leery between the two, like...
Yes. Yeah, it's really, especially the first few years, I was desperate to get in contact with them. And I wrote lots of letters, a few letters, which were never returned or were returned, or none of the communication was returned anyway, in any meaningful way. So it was just being rejected all over again. But I mean, it's human nature. You want to try and fix it. So, yeah, you end up going through the whole range of emotions, and then some days it's like, oh, to hell with it, I don't need them, and then the next day it's, oh, I miss them. It's a bit of everything, really.
So it's really back and forth, yeah.
It's back and forth, yeah, at least for me. I think it probably is for most. Some days you feel guilty, some days you feel justified. Yes, I am doing what is right for me, and for me it was good mentally to get out of there. I feel 1,000% better. That is the only negative to having left, is to have to leave them behind. But there is no way that I can go back. It's not like another religion. Many religions are face value. You can be a member but be inactive. You don't have to really do anything. With them, you have to engage in or you have to attend their weekly meetings. You also have to go door-to-door preaching, and so there's no way to really hide in that religion.
Yeah.
And
sounds pretty,
you know,
time consuming.
Very, yes, and you have to prepare, and if you, yes, it takes up all of your time, and that's for a good reason, to keep the members distracted from the real world going on around them.
Now, you had mentioned that some of the common feelings that you had felt were guilt and anger and helplessness and fear and denial and failure. Now, I'm sure that a lot of people out there have felt these as well, with the guilt. You know, I must not have raised my child right, or loved my parents enough, or the anger of, you know, why is this happening, or the helplessness of you know, it, I mean, it goes on. The different feelings can vary back and forth. What is some of the crucial steps that you took that you think would be helpful for others to kind of follow your advice as far as how you got beyond that?
Yes. Well, I had the, you know, in my case, it was because it was religious and it was a mind control kind of situation. The first thing I did was read everything I could about the true history of that organization and learn the truth about it, which helped me to logically realize that I was being mentally abused by simply being in that religion. So, but of course, a lot of people don't have that. But in general, knowledge is power. So I would definitely recommend therapy. I did some talk therapy, which helped a lot. And even if you don't have a lot of therapy, can be expensive. In our area, there are some graduate students that do it through the universities for a sliding scale kind of thing, depending on your income. But I definitely encourage that if it's available. Especially since you probably may not have a lot of friends, and that's another thing. It may be difficult. I'm still working on it, but try and rebuild the friend network if you've also lost that, and it's possible that you have. keeping busy, of course, is another big thing, just in general with work or hobbies. The other thing would be try not to obsess over the situation, because you can't control what they're feeling. You can't, and maybe that's one of the hard things too. You really can't control what they're feeling or saying or doing, and not knowing what they're saying or doing can drive you crazy, because you wonder, what are they really thinking of me? Have they disowned me? What's the conversations about? I wish I was a fly on the wall over there, but I don't know. Just not knowing drives you crazy. So keeping busy kind of helps with that. Trying to join support group, if you can find one. There's some good ones online, both on Facebook and off. Volunteering helps if you have a pet. Meetup, yeah. There's a few there.
Pets are another good way to get over those hurdles. The main thing is that because you're treating it like a process of death, the key things that you have to remember is to face your feelings, to be realistic with yourself.
Yes.
And to express that feeling in a tangible or creative way. Like, don't express it in a negative, violent way. And to look after your physical health, because you don't want to slip into a depression, and that can cause physical health deterioration. And don't let anyone tell you how you feel, and don't let yourself, don't tell yourself how to feel either. Like, don't say, oh, I shouldn't feel this way. I should be happy, or I should be this. Allow yourself to go through that process and to plan. The key point is to plan. Plan ahead for grief triggers. Like, if you know that, say, for example, with you in your situation, Ed, going to the supermarket where your mother shops at the time, you know she's going to be there. Don't go grocery shopping at that time when you know she's going to be in that particular store, because those are triggers.
Yes.
And these are all key points for getting past some of the little hurdles. And like you said, you have to take it, you know, sometimes moment by moment, day by day. And who knows if the pain of it ever goes away? Now,
no, of course it doesn't, but you have to be patient, like you said. That's very true.
Yeah, exactly. Now, the thing with estrangement is little kids can get caught up in the crossfire of these events. The adults sometimes can be selfish, and they don't think of the younger generations coming up who witness it and who maybe see the family dysfunction but don't really know the whole story. So you have to continue to let the younger generation know that you do care, and that perhaps, like you, they might see the dysfunction in the family unit or the group unit that is out there, and they'll have you available for when they're ready to take that step away from that dysfunction. Because the last thing you want is them feeling that they too are alone, because you're going through it as well. So you want to put it out there to these younger kids who are coming up and seeing this dysfunction, that you're there should the chance arise for them to step outside of that. Do you think that that's a healthy way of looking at it?
Absolutely. I have a sister 18 years my junior, and she, I hope exactly that will happen. You know, there's always the fear that my parents may die before we get a chance to reconcile, and we may never get a chance to reconcile. So I have to be realistic about that and not have unrealistic expectations. But for my sister, there's always hope. You should. My door is. You always have to keep your door open, even if theirs is closed.
Now, one of the things that you had touched briefly on was considering helping out through volunteering, say like at soup kitchens or things that regulate around holidays, because I know that holidays for some people can be extremely hard in getting past those hurdles where they're missing their family. So that might provide,
Yes.
Some sort of interaction and service to others where they feel that connection. You might also create a family unit by getting involved in senior citizen assisted living facilities. I know that there's lots of senior citizens that don't have family that would greatly appreciate someone visiting them and knowing that, you know, at least somebody cares about them. I mean, family is not always blood. It can be someone that you pick up and put under your wing, so to speak. So, and another thing that you had mentioned that you did, Ed, was started to extend your network and your friends, like your social supports.
Yes. I also did a lot of writing. I was writing letters to my family pretty regularly. I wasn't sending them, but it's a good therapy, even if you just do it for yourself, in the hope that, it helps you in the present to put your thoughts together, and you never know, someday they may read them.
Right.
So there's lots of little things you can do.
The one thing that you had mentioned that when you consider the possibilities of that open door and making contact, even in the smallest little smidge, you have to be at that level of maturity and healing to handle the possibility of being rejected all over again. And I know that that's a sore spot for a lot of people out there that, you know, even myself don't handle rejection very well. So... It's one thing you have to be able to get to that level where you can emotionally handle the cause and effect of going out there, saying hello to them, and then being rejected all over again.
Yeah, very true. So that could take years.
It could take 1 year. It could take 20 years. It could take 50 years, you know?
Yes.
Each person, it's a different level. And the thing of it is, you're not just talking about one-sided person here. There's two different sides of people here. So there's your willingness to be open and their willingness to be open. And it has to magically connect on some level in order for the healing process on both sides to take place and kind of reconnect at some point. Now, we've both experienced significant emotional growth and change since the estrangement, or do you feel that we're at the same level that we were at the time of the estrangement? Do you feel that emotional growth has taken place?
Me? On my behalf?
For you.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, a lot. I mean, it does make you stronger, I guess, in certain ways, I suppose. You learn to be a little more self-reliant, because you kind of have to be. You can't just pick up the phone and ask mom or dad to bail you out like you might have in the past, or your sister, or whoever's you're estranged from. So yes, you learn to be a little more self-sufficient, self-reliant. So I guess that can be a good thing. It's not all bad in that sense. You have to look at the positives as well. And it forces you to come out of your shell, meet different people, new people, volunteer, as I mentioned, or strike new friendships. So it's not the end of the world, in a sense.
No, it's a different world altogether, but there still is that memory and baggage there. Now, when you do set out to make new friendships, a new circle of friends and whatnot, there's this thought, you know, can I trust myself to set and maintain clear, respectful boundaries? And this is even if you're going to, say, if you're going to reach out and make contact with the people that you're estranged from as well, it's very important to remember, only do it if you can set and maintain clear, respectful boundaries for everybody. I mean, if we were going to look at it from a drug abuse situation, let's use that as an example. If you are estranged from a family member who is addicted to drugs, the respectful, clear boundary would be that you're not going to enable them and you're not going to hinder their healing process as well. And if you being involved in their life would do that, it'd be best you just step back and stay away. Am I correct in
yes.
saying that?
Absolutely. You have to respect yourself enough to put those boundaries up there. And if you're being infringed on emotionally or psychologically, financially, whatever it is, or all of the above, yes, you have to respect yourself enough to take yourself out of that. There is a gentleman who is on a parenting blog on the New York Times, and if I could just quickly read, he has also his he's gone through a similar thing, but his question is, I use the measurement, and these are his words, I use the measurement of, would I be friends with this person if we weren't related? If the answer is yes, I maintain contact and have a relationship. If no, I cut them off. And in his case, his father was abusive, his mother was abusive, so that was a bit different, but he had no regrets from that perspective. And he ends off his article saying, call me harsh, I just simply do not want to waste my time or endanger my peace and well-being by allowing others to poison my life. So there is that, that's not my case, but for a lot of people, they are estranged for that reason.
I myself am estranged from my family, exactly, because of abuse. And I set the clear, respectful boundaries that I refuse to be mentally, emotionally, physically abused. I'm 44 years old. My parents do not need to abuse me at this point in my life. So I cut off contact with them for that simple reason. Would I go back to contact them? Not at all. Not at all. I'm sure if they wanted to find me, they could. And if they do, and they're willing to apologize, then maybe I would, you know, lay down some boundaries and maybe look at going forward. But as far as actually jumping in and hugging and kissing and being back family again, no, that ship has sailed. It will never be that way again. And I don't feel the need to engage in old arguments to try and change their perception, because I know they're going to respond the same way. You know, what does that
true,
say?
Very wise.
Very definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
Yes.
If you're trying the same things or even new things and you're getting the same results, your best bet for your sanity and your health and your well-being, back away.
Yes. Very hard to do when you think that blood is thicker than water, but sometimes it's for your benefit.
Exactly. Like,
I'm glad you're able
to stand confidently in your own separate identity. You don't need to emotionally mesh with your family members, because that's not the healthiest plan of attack for you or for myself.
Right. Yes. Yes, perhaps your situation is more common for some, although there's a lot of reasons, but that's wonderful.
Mine
because
is
a lot
one
of people
of the
are not able to do that. A lot of people are not able to do that, and they suffer in silence, and they secretly hate everyone and everything, and plot their family's murder,
and I'm sure
a few murders or violence has happened because of that. And, of course, the kids.
Exactly. And this is all the things that you have to outweigh is, are you angry? Are they angry? Is the threat of violence or emotional, is your emotional well-being at jeopardy? Is your physical well-being at jeopardy? And when I say physical, I don't mean that they're going to per se beat you up, although some of them do that. But what I mean by that is when you are emotionally suffering, physically your health can go downhill. And so when you're being emotionally abused by a family member, you have to take into consideration the health aspects that ricochet and follow that. And if that is being jeopardized, maybe, perhaps maybe, I'm not telling you all what to do with your lives, but maybe being around that person might not be the best for you. But you be the judge of that yourself.
Yeah, it takes a lot of courage to do that. It takes a lot of courage.
It does, because there's a lot of guilt, of fear. For myself, and mostly my family, all of my family members cut me off. Every single one of them. They were all ordered by my mother to cease conversations with me. So no aunts, no uncles, nothing. There's only one that talks to me, and she had no idea anything was going on because she lives a tremendously far, far away. So she was not aware. She was one of the black sheep as well. So she didn't even know anything was going on. And this is, I'm sure, something you can relate to, is when you have this estrangement, you miss family get-togethers, you miss funerals, you miss weddings, you miss birthdays, you miss births. I mean, I've had births, I've had deaths in my family that I was not allowed to go to, that I was ordered to stay away from.
Right.
Now,
I'm
sure this is something you've thought as well, you know, if I have a death in my family, will I just show up? And I don't know if there ever is a right answer to that. Do you think that there's a right answer to that?
No, every situation is different, I guess. You have to just take it as it comes, see what feels right at the time. I can't really make it's a very gray, it's all grays. You can't make a black and white rule on that.
No, this is true. This is true. And because the feelings and the way that people are is so wide-ranged, there are no definite, you know, this is what you're going to feel, this is when you're going to feel it, and this is how you'll start feeling better, and this is when you'll start feeling better. There is no ladder to take to get over this. It sometimes is 3 steps forward, 2 back, 1 forward, 5 back. I mean, it just...
Yes.
It's all over the place. It truly is like the death process. So
that's how I feel. Yeah. With a gaping wound at the end of it, no closure. Yeah, that's the hardest part.
Well, this is it. The uncertainty of whether or not the reconnection is ever going to happen must be like a gavel hanging over your head.
In my case, yes, because I want a reconnection to happen. But in some, like yourself, you don't necessarily want that unless it's going to happen in better terms. So every situation is different, right?
As Melly66 is saying in the chat forum, it's very hard to explain to others. And it's so true. Mm-hmm. If it's one of those things that you've not been through, I mean, first of all, when you say to someone in public, I've been estranged from my family, the first thing that goes in their heads, what did you do to them?
Exactly. What's wrong with you?
And sometimes it's not you. You're doing it to protect yourself, you know? And
that's true.
People just don't understand it unless they've been there. And, you know, you see, like you see the videos, you know, or the movies when all the families are sitting around the table and they're all having a family meal together with generations of family. And you're like, you're almost in tears because you're just like, that's what I want. I want an entire family of love and support. And what did I get? I got people who would stab me the minute I turn, you know?
So, right. It's true. People do not understand. So, one lady on the bus the other day, same thing. She was talking about her parents and asked me about mine, and I just told her I've been estranged for 6 years, and she just looked at me like I had two heads. What do you mean?
Yeah, because they wonder, what are you? What's wrong with you? Were you in jail? Did you murder somebody? Why would your mama say goodbye to you? Not realizing that it could have been the other way around. Yeah. Maybe you said goodbye to your mama. You know, they don't understand, you know. And yeah, there are support groups out there. I know I did a bit of research before the show, and I found some on Facebook. If you write estranged, it will come up with estranged parents of children. There's many different Facebook groups out there that can help you with this healing process, but be very cautious with the groups that you do entertain with. As I like to say, your vibe attracts your tribe. And if you want to be positive and go forth with healing, you don't want to be hanging around the people and the groups that are all anger-based. And this is one of the things that I know that you struggled with personally, was there are these moments where you go through this angry process. Everybody goes through it because it's exactly like a death process. And there is that portion of time where you are angry, where you just want to lash out at the world and you want everybody to see the monster for what it is. But there comes a point in time where you need to say, this isn't productive and healthy for me anymore, and I need to move on. You know?
Exactly.
So you've got to either not be involved with those type of groups anymore and move on to something. And sometimes that means taking a step back and not being in any groups for a while until you find that one day you look back and you go, that doesn't bother me as much anymore. So I can talk to those people and it doesn't affect me. But when the anger is affecting you and you want to move forward, don't be chit-chatting with these people that are extremely still in that angry zone, and some of them stay in it for a very long, long time. And that's okay. That is okay. We're not telling you that, no, you shouldn't feel angry, or, you know, you should be over that right now. And that's one of the things that I cannot stand, is when people say, why aren't you over this by now? Why are you still angry about this? Because of this. This is why I'm still angry about this, because I'm not being validated. My feelings are not being validated. And maybe this is all that we need, is just to have our feelings validated and someone to understand, even if they can't sympathize or empathize with us, to at least just listen and say, yes, you have a right to feel angry about that. And you do. Oh, my God, you do have a right to feel angry about this. But that won't get you where you need to go. Feeling angry, it's a method to the heal. It's a method on the path of healing, but it's not going to get you healed to stay in that energy of angry. So you need to move on past that, you know? So,
yes, I agree.
As Melly says, I'm going to read here what Melly has written in the group, because I find it's very insightful. It's a very strange feeling to mourn a person who is alive and breathing. Strange indeed. And I cannot agree with that more, because to you, it almost is like they're dead, but you know they're alive because you hear people say, oh, I saw your mom at the grocery store the other day, or I saw your grandbaby the other day. And they're looking so big, and they're walking now, and they're giggling now. And you can start that anger all over again, because you can be like, that's not fair. I'm being robbed of that experience. I wanted to see them giggled for the first time, or walk for the first time, or get married, or, you know, whatever process in life. I wanted to see them go through that. I know with your sister, you wanted to see her graduate and get married one day and have her first kids. You don't even know if that's going to happen at this point. And not that you dwell in that.
No.
But if the event were to happen and you found out indirectly whether it be social media or through a friend or something, the hurt would be right there, like it had just happened. And this is what's so harsh with estrangement, is the wound is never fully healed unless the unit is back together and healed together. And sometimes that never happens, which is unfortunate. It is unfortunate, but it truly is a good point that Melly has brought up, that it is like mourning the death of a person who's still living, which is
very true.
Awkward, especially if you see them out somewhere, because then you're like, it's almost like you're seeing a ghost. You know, you see them out and you don't recognize them at first, and you feel like, and you know, there's part of you that still cares, even though it's a toxic relationship. I myself, with my mother, had heard through the grapevine that she had had a stroke. And my first reaction was to run and fix everything, like I always had in the past. But I phoned my brother, who yelled at me and said, I don't want to talk to you. And I said, I just need to know if she's okay. And he just yelled, no stroke here, no stroke here, and slammed the phone down. So this is the level of maturity that I'm dealing with. But I still cared on some level, regardless of it being a toxic relationship. I still cared on some level, as I do with any human being, if I hear that they've had a stroke or some kind of health crises. In some level, I do care, no matter whether I know them or not. I do care. I do genuinely care.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm not sure, had the phone call been received warmly and then they were honest with me, my reaction, I might have let those walls down and I might have crossed my own boundaries. So I, in a way, I'm kind of glad that they kept that wall up, because it's not safe to be chatting with them at all.
Exactly. You understand.
It's hard to know how to go on, because once they give you an inch, you get so excited that the communication has started that you want to like run over there, break out the coffee and start hugging and kissing them. And sometimes that's not the best plan of attack, because sometimes that can make them push you away even further and then you never hear from them again. So, I mean, how do you heal from all this? And how do you go on? Well, the best thing that I can think of is to create a space of safe haven where you can go and you can jot down your feelings. I really like your idea of the diary, you know, of writing down.
Helpful.
Even if it's just a blog, who knows? Maybe you could write a book someday or something. But to write about it, because you had mentioned that you wrote letters to your family members, but you never mailed them. I highly suggest not mailing them. I mailed mine, and it created a whole bunch of chaos. Oh, me and my big fat mouth sometimes. don't be mailing these letters.
But.
Yeah, and you want to get those feelings out. You want to express those feelings, and by rights, you have every right to do so. Just don't do what I did. Don't mail them to them, because then they go to the police saying that you're harassing them. And that's not really what your intent was. Your intent was just to get the weight of the world off your chest, because you feel like when your identity is your family and you've wrapped your life up in this little package, this little box you call your family, to all of a sudden have no contact with them at all and be shut outside of that box, you feel like you're lost and that you're in a desert and that all you want is that drink of water and you can't find it. And so you strive to get back in that box with that family unit, and sometimes you can't.
Yes.
Sometimes you can't.
The box is broken. Yeah. It'll never go back the same way it was.
maybe not best get in it, but get out the hot glue gun and glue that sucker back together.
Yeah, you can,
or get
you
your own
can
damn
do
box.
Some things.
Get your own damn box.
Yeah, that's true. That's a possibility, too.
But no, you should always keep the door open just in case they yeah. come to their own healing process and are able to, you know, come forward to you. And maybe if they know that they can come forward and that you're their last hope and their last chance at getting information, whatever that information might be, then perhaps, and maybe the information is just for yeah. the healing process for them. Because, yeah, the one thing you have to remember is they're going through this process too on their own terms, but they're going through this estrangement process
yeah.
to themselves. So for them, yeah. it's like a death process for them as well.
Yeah.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Part of you is probably thinking, now, how do I encourage this process so that they'll want to have contact again? I would not highly suggest that at all, because that can be disastrous results. Meddling in that can
yeah.
can always turn back on you and karma, as they say.
Yes.
So you
yeah,
want to
true.
Leave it alone. You want to leave them to their healing process. Do you have any advice, Ed, for the people listening
yeah,
as to...
Yeah, well, you're not alone. This is a topic that does not get enough play in the media or support groups or just in general understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But there are millions of us out there. You just have to ask, and you will get help. And just be patient. Be prepared for a long marathon. This isn't a sprint, but you will get through it. And keep your spirits
okay.
up. Avoid the depression. Avoid the, you know, anything, any crutches like alcohol or anything that might make things worse. Just
yeah.
go on with your life as best you can, and you will,
mm-hmm.
you will feel better eventually. You will,
mm-hmm.
and you will respect yourself for putting those boundaries if that's what was needed.
Yeah, you have to. You have to put those boundaries there. And always be willing to internally look at yourself and what you contributed to the situation. It could be that you've contributed nothing to this situation. You could be a fly-by-night victim of this circumstances. But you have to be able
right.
to look internally first and say, what can I change about myself before I change the situation? Because changing a situation involves changing someone else's point of view. And 9 times out of 10, that's not going to be successful. So you want to change your
very
outlook
true.
On the situation first. Not
yes.
necessarily the situation itself, but your outlook on the situation, you know? So instead of
yes.
looking at it like, I want to be happy, look at it as, I am happy. And sooner or later, you will believe that. You have to keep saying
yes.
it for a while before you actually start to believe it. But hobbies, get hobbies. Get involved in community activities. Get involved in, say, for example, I know one of the listeners had mentioned here in the chat forum that they hadn't seen their grandchild in a while. Maybe getting involved in... activities for youth or children might
yeah.
help bridge that gap. And who knows, maybe with that, the person will see that they're trying to reconnect on some level to their situation, and then maybe doors will open down the road. You never know. Don't
That's
do
right.
it with the streak. Let me rephrase that. Don't do these things with the intent to open that communication, because it may not happen. Because communication is a two-way street, and you have to rely on the other car coming down the street to be able to,
yeah.
to make its presence known. But getting out there and getting involved and getting something to kind of preoccupy that void that you're feeling might boost your confidence, might boost your energies enough to bring you to a space of healing. And then when you get to that space of healing, you're better, you can look at the situation a lot more clearer. And Ed, was there ever a time for you where you weren't at that level of healing, where you looked at the situation and you were like, why me, why me, why me?
Oh, of course, yeah. First year, pretty much the first year or two. Yes, absolutely. But you eventually do get past it and you succumb to an acceptance. And it's different for everyone how you get there, but you will eventually get there. But you have to let go eventually of the guilt and the fear and the anger.
And the outcome of the situation. That's a big thing. You have to release control over the outcome of the situation because you don't have control over the outcome of the situation. And the more you try to have control over it, the more it will slip out of your fingers. So your best bet is just to change your outlook on the situation, and then the situation will start, you will find that the situation will start to form to fit with your outlook on the situation. And it might take
a
very long time. This is not an overnight battle.
Absolutely.
This is not when you're going to win in a couple of hours.
Oh, boy, yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? No, it is a marathon, as I said. It's a long-term thing, years probably, decades perhaps. Many people have fought that battle for a long time.
Are there any books or any movies or documentaries or anything that you watched that kind of gave you that aha moment of being able to accept the idea of moving forward? Because I think of what a lot of people are dealing with is the fear of moving forward, for then they feel like they've abandoned hope and abandoned the people that they're secretly hoping to be reconnected with.
No, there wasn't any one particular book or movie or anything. There are some good support groups. So one of them is estrangedstories.com online.
Ooh.
That was helpful because, yes, they have, it's a members, you have to join. It's moderated, which is good.
Right.
They don't tolerate abuse or, you know, they have a mission statement of, helping others heal. And
so that's a strange
helping others progress. Stories.
What is that website again, Ed?
Estrangedstories.com. Yes, and they have a
lot
of
that would be a good
thousands of people.
Outlet.
Yes, I'd recommend that.
So you're definitely not alone, by the sounds of it.
Oh no, no, not at all. And there's groups within this site for Christian members of different countries. Siblings of estrangement, grandparents of estrangement, parents. I mean, there's so many angles to this. There's a lot of facets to it. Mm-hmm.
I like the sound of that. Healing is always a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We're never meant to hang on to anger.
No, it's not healthy, as you said. And there's one quote on here that I like saying, though no one can go back and make a brand new start, anyone can start from now and make a brand new ending. And sometimes
that's
what
beautiful.
We have to do. Yeah, it's really
that
nice. It's anonymous.
That is absolutely beautiful. I am so glad we had you on today, Ed.
Thank you.
Extremely insightful, and I know that our guests have had tremendous healing possibilities through this. And so anybody wants to read those stories, it's estrangedstories.com, and you can read other people's stories and how they got through it and how they overcame these hurdles of being shut out and how they got forward and healed. So thank you very much, Ed, for coming along, and
thank you.
We are
all
honored and treasured to have you. Yes,
you.
Most
care.
Definitely.
Bye.
Okay, thank you, Ed. So that is just a beautiful aspect that he brought up, that you know, you can't go back and start again, but what you can do is start a new ending, and that has never been more beautifully put. And it's we have someone here saying, Melly saying, that one of the most positive things that arose from their story is that they found roots in spirituality. And finding yourself, finding where you fit in this world, is always a beautiful, beautiful ending to the story, I guess you could say. So thank you very much, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. It was a pleasure and an honor to share this time with you, and we hope that you find a little bit of healing. And be sure to check out that website, estrangedstories.com. Maybe there's a story out there that you can completely relate to and that will bring you blessed healing. So, blessed being to you all, and have yourself a fantastic night. Thank you for joining us at Life Outside the Box, Paranormal Paragons Radio.